It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, and all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
You know what that means.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
Mankind became stupider.
Now back to Toucher and Rich on Boston's home for sports.
With respect to the balls and that there was obviously an issue with the balls.
I don't think anybody knew there was an issue with the balls.
To me, those balls are perfect. I can only speak for myself. I don't want anyone touching the balls. Rubbing the balls. To me, those balls are perfect. Some guys like them round, and some guys like them thin. Some guys like old balls, new balls. They're all different, so you gotta feel them, and you gotta squeeze them. To me, those balls are all perfect. I choose the balls that I want. You know, I grip it, I grab it, I feel the lace, I feel the leather. I wouldn't want anyone touching the balls. I would zip those things up and lock them away. Some days one ball may feel good, the next day it may not. I want to be very familiar with the equipment that I'm using. This is an ISIS. No one's dying, but this is a very important thing. Because to me, those balls are perfect. I need no one speaking for myself. I don't want anyone touching the balls, rubbing the balls. To me, those balls are perfect. Some guys like them round, and some guys like them thin. Some guys like old balls, new balls. They're all different, so you gotta feel them, and you gotta squeeze them. To me, those balls are all perfect. You gotta feel them, and you gotta squeeze them. To me, those balls are all perfect. You gotta feel them, and you gotta squeeze them. To me, those balls are all perfect. You know, I grip it, I grab it, I grab it, I grip it. To me, those balls are all perfect. Zip those things up, zip those up, and lock them away. To me, those balls are all perfect.
Like I said, I had no... Yeah.
At 5, the Sports Hub, we're Toucher and Rich, Dave Wedge and Casey Sherman. Wrote a book called 12, The Inside Story of Tom Brady's Fight for Redemption, talking about the whole Deflategate saga. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us today.
All right, first of all, how did you get access to Tom Brady and the guys that you talked to for this book?
Well, with Tom, it was a real coup for us because he's never cooperated with a book before. So we had to employ and hire a field producer, Matt Chatham, who's Brady's old buddy, his old roommate, so to speak. And he really foamed the runway for Dave and I to get Brady some questions for Brady to answer on the record. You know, this was during the season last year, so Brady didn't have, you know, 2 seconds to take a leak, yeah, let alone do an extensive interview. And we had a very aggressive deadline for the book. You know, we were looking to get him after the season, but we didn't have time to do it. So we had to, do what we could to get him on the record. And Matt was fantastic working with us to make that happen.
The quotes that you got from Tom Brady are interesting, too. I mean, that's obviously the thing that's getting most of the press. What were you most surprised about as far as the things he said, his reaction? I know the one thing that everyone's talking about is how he felt he was thrown under the bus.
Yeah, well, you know, remember that first press conference, you know, when Bill Belichick said, go ask Tom. So I think that was like the initial betrayal there. And Tom was, you know, felt a little bit betrayed there. And then all of a sudden, you know, 4 months go by and Bob Kraft is saying, we're going to fight this. And then, boom, drops his appeal. The Patriots dropped their appeal. Brady saw that on TV like everybody else. And, you know, we worked very closely with the NFLPA on the story, the Players Association. When, you know, Tom's coach betrays him, Bob Kraft betrays him, and now Tom's by himself. But the union was there to fight for him. So Tom turned to the union. They're the ones that really had his back. He sees that press conference. Tom picks up the phone and calls Demora Smith from the NFLPA and says, "What the bleep? Why aren't I getting the support on this thing that I need?" So it was a pretty tough moment for Tom, I think.
Does it say anything to you that he allowed you guys to write that in the book? That he put that out there in the universe, that he felt he was thrown under the bus by basically the people who have been looking out for him?
Well, I mean, Brady he's been very guarded in the press. He was guarded with us too in terms of the questions that he answered on the record for us.
But that's a big one.
That's a big one, and we were able to really get a lot of that. You know what Brady couldn't say, you know, the people around him could. And, you know, he's always employed surrogates to really, his dad, for example, to really kind of get his messaging across. and that's, you know, a lot of it is exactly what we write about in the book, because as Dave mentioned, Brady didn't know Kraft was going to throw him under the bus like that. He never knew Kraft was going to give up the fight. Now, we spent some time with Robert Kraft and Jonathan Kraft as well. And, you know, the way we explain it in the book is, we feel like Kraft had to make that decision. Kraft didn't want to be Al Davis. When you sue the NFL, you're persona non grata for the rest of your tenure as an owner. You know, you're going to be on the outside looking into that Illuminati type of organization that the NFL ownership is. But it's almost like that scene in The Godfather where Corleone has to make peace with Italia. And he does, but he says, "If lightning should strike my son, then I'm going to blame somebody in this room."
Sure.
And we felt that Kraft always had a great loyalty and love for Brady, and we think that manifested itself last season when Garoppolo was jettisoned to the San Francisco 49ers for a second-round pick. You know, that was Kraft doing that.
I guess what shocks me is that in your book, it shows that Brady was surprised that Kraft made that speech, and I would have thought that Kraft, being as savvy as he is, would have sat down with Brady and told him ahead of time that he was going to do that.
Yeah, I mean, you would think, but that's not what happened. You know, and like I said, you know, Tom was always a good company guy with the Patriots, but he was also always a good union guy. When the union needed Tom Brady, he was there, you know, in the collective bargaining and all that. Tom was front and center. So when Tom was left on that island alone to fight this Deflategate scandal, which, remember, Spygate was about the Patriots and the organization. Deflategate was right on Brady. It was Tom Brady's a cheater, not the Patriots' cheaters. Tom Brady's a cheater. Tom turned to the union, and they're the ones that really picked up this fight for him, and that's where it went.
So this book really unfolds like a John Grisham novel, you know, much more so than a sports book. We really, got deep with the NFLPA and followed the people that protected Brady's blind side in the courtroom and in the boardroom. And their story is really fascinating. And Goodell is such an incredible villain in this book. And we were giving him all, you know, the...
You're preaching to the choir right now. You're speaking to his... one of the best-selling shirts in New England was the clown nose thing that Barstool put out. But, I mean, that's why that Super Bowl win was so satisfying. It was... More than anything, everyone wanted to see that moment where Brady had to get the trophy from Roger Goodell.
Casey and I, before we started this book, we were thinking about doing just a story, a general story about the dark side of the NFL, and we had kind of tabled it, and then we did a different book, and then the Super Bowl happened. So when the Falcons Super Bowl happened, we were like, well, I guess we got our ending. So you couldn't have written it better if we made it up.
And the big thing that you get from the book, the big selling, the big is that Brady was offered a deal that he refused to take. This is the breaking news in the book.
Yeah, it was a Sophie's choice that Goodell offered him. Pay $1 million fine. We're going to vacate that four game suspension, but you have to publicly come out and say to the world that your two equipment guys tampered with the footballs, and Brady didn't take that deal.
And who told you that? Like, where did you hear that from? Brady?
The NFLPA.
Oh, the NFLPA.
Yeah,
okay.
This was all his legal guys that were literally dealing with what was on the table at the time.
To be clear, I mean, you know, Tom didn't want to talk about Deflategate, you know, Fortress Foxborough and all that stuff. There was things that we asked him and he answered, and there was things that he didn't want to talk about.
Why did Goodell want him to throw two nobodies under the bus?
Like, to win.
Yeah, exactly. I think then that shows that the Patriots broke the rules. If Tom Brady comes out and says, yeah, my equipment guys tamper with the footballs, you know, I'm not going to pretend to know what Goodell was thinking. Common sense says that
go after the organization.
Exactly. Right. They implicated themselves.
So, I mean, with all of that, we're with Casey Sherman, Dave Wedge. They wrote the new Deflategate book 12. The most fascinating thing to me about Deflategate, because it's still unsolved, is what the hell happened to those two guys? Where are John Jastrzemski? Where is Jim McNally? And why are they ghosts?
They're under 6 feet of lime somewhere. You know, we tried to reach those guys and we're willing to go on the record with them, obviously, but we were unsuccessful. We're still making entries to get them to tell their story for future editions for the book. Would love for them to tell their story on the record.
And since the book came out, you know, we've gotten some new information, some new leads that we're pursuing.
But these guys really are kind of minor, almost comical characters in the book. The bigger scandal is the sting operation that Goodell and the NFL really employed to get Brady. I mean, they had their chess pieces in play before there was even an allegation during the AFC Championship about tampered balls. It's really interesting. And again, going back to Goodell, the character, he's a very Nixonian character for us. Here's a guy that had never had a job outside the NFL in his professional career. His dad was a politician whose career got derailed by President Nixon in the 70s. Dad never had a really close relationship with his son. So Goodell was always looking for this father figure. Mm-hmm. In comes Robert Kraft, who had just purchased the Patriots, starts to mentor and groom this guy within the walls of the NFL offices, anoints him as commissioner. So there's a beautiful, great, strong relationship. Then 2007, Spygate happens. A much more legitimate scandal than Deflategate ever was.
Right.
But Goodell was colluding with Kraft to destroy videotaped evidence that could have even implicated the team deeper into that scandal. So the other NFL owners looked at that and said, okay, if this ever happens again,
kill him. Yep.
This is not a traffic violation. This is a capital murder case.
Yep.
So Goodell, in order to retain his power, he's got to slay his father in like Shakespearean, you know, terms. It's a fascinating case study.
Are you hearing that Jastrzemski and McNally, I mean, because everyone's assuming that they got paid off to not say anything, because right now, and you mentioned it, I mean, if they wrote a book or if they hooked up with you guys, I mean, they could stand to make a decent amount of money. I mean, these are the people who, if anyone knows what really happened, it's those guys.
Well, I think, you know, I think their stories are told pretty thoroughly in the Wells report for the most part, but I think you're right. I think they have a lot more to say. You know, everyone says, oh, they must have been paid off. Like Casey said, they're buried under lime. But we know they're alive. We do know that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we were not able to get them on the record. We'd love to. And I do think that there are some things that they could shed light on still to this day. Whether or not they'll ever tell their story, who knows? And why they won't, you know, I don't know. Was there bags of cash? Who knows?
Now, when you take a look at what has happened here in the offseason, actually just before the offseason, you know, the Seth Wickersham article came out about there being behind the scenes a lot of distrust and the air that's completely changed from what we thought it was. When you did the research on this book, does it all kind of make sense now?
Oh, sure.
Because this is like this was like the beginning of it all, right?
It's the genesis of a lot of the fractures.
Because you mentioned Kraft kind of making things right with Brady because of Garoppolo. Where does he stand with Belichick? Has that been kind of smoothed over?
Well, I mean, to our knowledge, it hasn't been smoothed over. We think Kraft and Brady have a strong relationship. We're not sure about Kraft and Belichick, and we know that Belichick and Brady certainly don't have a warm and fuzzy relationship. Not that they ever did, but you're seeing Brady really kind of off the cuff now, talking a little bit more about playing for his teammates, playing for his family, but he's not the company man that he has been for 18 years. You know, it took 8 years for the Beatles to break up. You know, the Patriots going into their 19th season, and finally we're seeing, you know, is this the Abbey Road for the New England Patriots?
All right, well, the book is called 12, The Inside Story of Tom Brady's Fight for Redemption. Casey Sherman and Dave Wedge, a lot of breaking news in that thing, and also a lot of intrigue. As they said, it reads like a Grisham novel, so looking forward to taking a look at that. Thank you guys so much for coming on.
Yeah, appreciate it. And we're going to be doing a book signing at the Prudential Center, Barnes & Noble in Boston today at noon. So Jastrzemski and McNally, if you guys want to come by, we'd be happy to talk to you.
Well, come here first.
That's right. Come here first.
Exactly. Come here first and then head over there. All
thanks,
right.
Guys.
Thanks a bunch, guys. Always good having you on.
This portion of Toucher and Rich is brought to you by 128 Volvo.
You're listening to Toucher and Rich, the Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. We are Toucher and Rich. And Hard Knocks is focusing on the Cleveland Browns this year. And we've found out that the coaching staff is not the greatest in the world. The players are not the most respectful players in the world.
It's the best. I've said it before. The reason that this season is so amazing is that it's the first time we've got a look into the heart of a world-class loser organization. Like, they do everything wrong. Hugh Jackson, the coach, everyone looks at him like Michael Scott from The Office. Nobody respects him, even though he thinks he's the man. And last episode, we saw basically every single one of the players was dilly-dallying around, except for, Landry. He was out there just making one-hand catches. He's been unbelievable. But everyone else is absolutely slacking, and the coaching staff isn't doing anything about it. So this week, they took it a notch up even further. Let's start first with Corey Coleman. Now, Corey Coleman, right before the first episode aired, got traded. And so this is in the first 2 minutes of the season, okay? Corey Coleman's going out there, and he's not even trying. Nobody is trying. There's no motivator on the coaching staff. There's nobody who's connecting to any. No one wants to be a Cleveland Brown. So Corey Coleman goes out there, just half-asses it, and then goes into Hugh Jackson's office to talk to him. I want you to hear, first of all, Hugh Jackson and just how cowardly he is, all right? They have demoted him to the second team for reps. He's been so bad. And Hugh Jackson's there watching it when it happens, and Hugh Jackson seems surprised when Corey Coleman comes into his office. This is how Hard Knocks opened yesterday.
Giving up on a ball on the inside, it's in your chest.
It wasn't in my chest.
That's about what it's been.
By the way, and they're talking back to their coaches. Right. Like, that's the other thing, too. It's like, you ain't won nothing. Shut up. It's like, yeah, it wasn't in my chest. That right there is, what's the guy for the Steelers?
Todd Haley.
Yeah, Todd Haley. That's Todd Haley he's talking to right there.
That's about what it's been. Yeah, until you show me otherwise, I'll get excited. Right now, I'm not.
I think he looks around. He's distracted. Doesn't run. One of the goes, he looked like he was running 5 miles an hour.
Corey.
Hugh Jackson.
What's happening to sports fans?
Why am I running second team?
What did you say?
Why am I running second team?
That's crazy to me. Go and get Todd in it. Go ask Todd.
Yeah, and then come back and come. If you don't want me to play, why won't y'all just trade me?
And that's how it opens up. Very next scene. He's been traded. Just going in, walking in, for asking for trades. Players don't care. No one wants to be there. And I love how Hugh's like, why are the second team? I don't know. Why don't you go ask Todd Haley?
Well, good for them for trading him.
You wanted to be gone? Sure, you're gone.
Yeah. Got a 7th-round pick for him.
Well, how about that?
Former top 15 selection, I believe.
Who is Corey Coleman?
He's a wide receiver. I forget what school he went to, but he was a 1st-round pick last year, the year before, and they flipped him for a 7th.
Yeah, another Browns pick that ended up being absolute garbage. So we also know the story from this past week of Antonio Callaway. Now, he's the player who got pulled over, and by the way, they show the videotape of him, of his arrest. Like, they've got the dashboard cam. It's at 3:04 in the morning, the day before a practice.
Oh, wow.
So he's got to be, like, there. I mean, what are they, like, 7, 8 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah, right.
And it's 3:04 in the morning, and he gets pulled over. And on top of that, he's also the guy that they punished by making play an entire game.
Right.
So he shows up, and this was brilliant directing by the people from Hard Knocks. It starts off with him getting pulled over. You're going to hear some of the dashboard cam. And then it's a montage of people that day at practice, coaches walking up to him going, dude, you okay? And Todd Haley, there's one point where you're going to hear a really long pause. It's Todd Haley just looking him in the face and looking him in the eyes. And meanwhile, Antonio Callaway is just kind of like swaying.
He's still
like
drunk.
He's still drunk or stoned. He's like, and there, he's like, Haley's like maybe an inch from his face, just looking at his eyes like, what's going on? Now, remember, no one knew about it when he got pulled over. He didn't tell anybody. So this was excellent, excellent direction when they put it together.
Callaway has been promoted to the first team, but what should be a happy day isn't because of the rough night before.
71 tendering. Traffic's about how in front of Planet Fitness.
Hey, Antonio. Hey, I can smell a little bit of weed from the car. Were you smoking earlier or anything like that?
Callaway was cited for marijuana possession and driving with a suspended license. He wasn't arrested, but he hasn't told anyone in the organization about the incident.
What's up, Levin? You all right? What's wrong? I ain't looking in your eyes. What's wrong? Talk to your boy. You straight? All right. If I'm not, you know where my office is. I ain't told you.
Get yourself in shape, Antonio. The only way you're going to do it is hustling back every single time, taking these card reps. You got to do it to get in the kind of shape you need to be in. Need a hug or anything? You okay?
No, I'm good.
You able to keep things black and white out here? All right?
Mm-hmm.
Remember all those talks we had back a few months ago? You look like a puppy dog. You look like a little puppy dog. Come on. We need you. We need you. This is very important.
Well, there's no way he's still high, so he's just dragging.
He's dragging. Like, I mean, the guy hasn't slept.
This is amazing.
So think about that. I mean, this is a guy. I mean, this is where everyone, obviously, their priorities are super high to play for the Cleveland Browns, that he's out, you know, smoking, doing whatever at 3:04 in the morning, and then he shows up and just is a mess on the field. Like, he can hardly – it looks like he's having a hard time standing up. He can't look anybody in the eye.
Right.
So he's just kind of turning away. And meanwhile, Haley just gets right up to him and is staring at him like, we okay?
Haley seems to be the only coach that has any clue what's going
on. Well, Haley's doing an okay job, but I think a lot of it has to do with he knows Hugh Jackson is such an F-up that he realizes he could be next in line. And if you want to know how much of an F-up Hugh Jackson is and how he really has no idea what he's doing. So last week, everyone was ripping on the guy for not being strong and forceful and like kind of being a wimp. So, of course, what does he do on this episode of Hard Knocks?
He tries to turn it around.
He tries to turn it around. However, listen after this speech that he makes. The voice you're going to hear is Tyrod Taylor. Tyrod Taylor walks up to Hugh Jackson and starts telling him nicely how to do his job. Take a listen.
When the f*** did we start walking around out here? Huh? When did we start our level all of a sudden becomes like this? When did that start, Kirko? Never. When? When did it start, Batonio? Never. Never. I'm not watching that s*** anymore. Coaches, you better get after these guys and get to where they're supposed to be and let the practice the way we practice. Back to the top, the one drop. Let's go. Let's go.
Hey, Hugh. Hugh. You can keep a rolling camera up there, and they can catch that. All you gotta do is show it one time in the meeting. And now guys are conscious of it, and they build good habits of jogging off the field. And yep. Yeah. So show it in the film.
Some things from today that I want to show. This is what you're putting on tape. It ain't good enough.
So Tyrod Taylor goes over and goes, you know what you got to do? You should film these guys.
Tyrod Taylor, who has been such a coaching legacy.
Revolutionary thing, taping practice and showing it to your players.
Yeah, but the giants of coaching that he's played under.
Something that probably almost every coach in the NFL does. Tyrod Taylor walks up to him and goes, you know what? If you want to motivate these guys, just show them your videotape and everything. Show them the video of them not working hard and show it to them, you know, in the film room, and they'll be self-conscious about it and they'll try harder. And the very next scene is Hugh Jackson in the villain. Guys, look at this video right here of today's practice.
All right, Rich. And finally, what do we got?
Okay. And here is Antonio Callaway after everybody finds out that he ended up getting pulled over, and they didn't even arrest him. They just gave him like a fine for the weed.
Right.
And him sitting in the room with Hugh Jackson and the GM.
All right, Coach and I, we just found out about what happened on Sunday night. And to be honest with you, I'm a little disappointed. Coach is a little disappointed. Explain to us the whole situation. Explain to us.
Right. He said I ain't stopped, but I was coming out of the gas station. Literally, was no cars on the road. And he came out of the other gas station. He stopped me. He was like, you got your ID? I gave him my ID. And he was like, he went back to the car. He was like, my license is suspended. He searched me. He searched my car, and then he found a roach. He found like an old roach, like a clip, and he opened it. And I asked him, "Are you
real?" Oh yeah, roach clips. It's like the one person on the planet that still uses roach clips. And then Todd Haley's like, "Hell yeah, you got a feather on that bad boy."
that's an neck type thing, right?
I mean, you're a football player. Let's not worry about like the butt end of a joint.
That's a good point. You have enough money to not have to do that.
Yeah, scrounge them all up, or at least, you know, open it up and make a new one.
And he opened it. And I asked him, "Are you really going to use that?" Like, I just got my car up. You feel me? I said,
"When did you get your car up?"
I got my car up like 4 or 5 days ago.
Okay, so then what happens after that?
Once he find that, then he just like, "I'm like, you finna use that?" He like, "I have to." So I'm like, "All right." And he said, "It's less than a speeding ticket." I don't know what that means. That's all he said, was, "It's less than a speeding ticket."
Okay, if comes up, you have my number, you got John's number, you call us ASAP. Okay, that's what I expect from you from here on in. I believe you. But if I'm wrong on this one, then I'm going to have your ass.
All right.
Well, he's going to have his ass.
That scares the living bejesus out of everybody. What would you have done if you were the coach?
If I was the coach and
I would have said, you're out too late. I could, if I start busting guys for smoking weed, I'm not going to have much of a team.
I thought it was great, though, the way that what the guy was saying was different than what you saw in the video.
But I also like the argument that he's had the car for like 5 days, but it was an old roach.
Driving with a suspended license. I mean, this was avoidable. It was.
Yeah, but I mean, every petty crime that goes on in the NFL, I'm going to be spending all day doing it.
No, you should have seen the way that they also tried to paint the game that they punished him by making him play from the beginning, you know, the first snap to the last, is that at the end he like ended up having a great play. I forget what it was, but you know, the coaches were going nuts. They're like, "See, that's why we kept you in for the whole game."
Okay.
Like, "All right, jackass. Sure, you guys are the best. You've cracked the code."
All right, Rich, we have the stat coming up. What will we talk about?
Oh, the most depressing beer promotion in history has been launched by Bud Light. We will get to that. On top of that, somebody's saying something very, very mean in the national press about Jason Tatum, and I will not stand for it.
All right, here are the headlines.
98.5. Kutcher and Rich.
Now it's time to get to the stuff that we couldn't get to. It's the stack.
.85 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Rich, what is it we haven't gotten to today?
Well, Bleacher Report ran a piece yesterday listing the NBA's 5 most overhyped players entering the coming season. And the very first person on that list, Jason Tatum.
Yeah. Somewhere Gorman is wringing his hand.
Well, then you hear the explanation. So the writer of the article says, Kyrie Irving has never been one to take a back seat. And with him back on the floor, it'll be much harder for Tatum to build on his postseason takeover. Throw Gordon Hayward into the mix, and there will be even fewer touches for the 20-year-old wing. And that's to say nothing of Jaylen Brown, who's a superior defender and movement, an average 18 points a game in the playoffs on more efficient shooting than Tatum managed. He's due for an increased role as well. All right, and to that I say, he makes a good point.
Yeah.
On top of that's
absolutely true.
I mean,
you add 2 all-stars to a team, and you're not going to get as many touches.
Yeah, your touches are going down, and if you look at the averages that he had when he was on the court with Kyrie Irving, they were a lot less than he was without Kyrie Irving. As a matter of fact, Jason Tatum's regular season average was 13.9 points. However, in the postseason when Irving was not there, it went all the way up to 18.5. So
right.
If you think that immediately you're going to see the player that you saw put up the kind of numbers that he did when he was taking on the 76ers or even the Cleveland Cavaliers, that's just not going to happen, and that's not a bad thing.
And by the way, the same thing's going to happen to Al Horford. I mean, remember how good Al Horford was in the playoffs? And, I mean, we're back to, you know, advanced stats Al Horford.
Right.
Sure.
We're back to distributing the ball.
We're back to you need him. And defensively, that's not going to change. Al Horford's a very good defensive player. But offensively, all that stuff you saw him do now to stretch and in the postseason, gone. He's all of a sudden the fourth option on offense.
And by the way, I was kind of laughing at Felger and Maz yesterday. I don't know why they just played. Maybe they were out of town for a while, but they just now played the clip of Jaylen Brown saying that they are going to make it to the finals, and that, you know, people say that, you know, LeBron James has had a stronghold on the East for years now, and he goes, but I'm sick of people saying that now that he's gone, we have our chance. He goes, we had them, like, in the Eastern Conference Finals. We did. I mean, we were right there, and I think that it was prime for the taking, and they were laughing at him and saying, oh, yeah, but you didn't win, blah, blah, blah. Sure, your team had him. This year would have been different. Well, yeah, you didn't have Gordon Hayward and you didn't have Kyrie Irving. You're telling me that without, if you just would add one of those guys, that wouldn't have been worth getting them over the hump to win Game 7? Without a doubt, they would have. I don't think there's any question there, but I heard a lot of people crapping on him for that. But no, I mean, a lot of Celtics fans got kind of angry about that yesterday. And to that I say, listen, Jason Tatum, he's not going to put up those numbers, and you shouldn't care. I heard Paul Pierce say in an interview that each one of these guys is going to have to kind of put their pride aside if they want to succeed. You, like, guys like Kyrie Irving isn't going to put up the kind of numbers that he used to in the past. It goes for everyone. If you've got a guy like Gordon Hayward taking it up, and I think another thing that people forget is just how good Gordon Hayward is as a basketball player.
Very easy to forget, and a lot of people didn't see him here because he played in Utah.
Right.
He played in a very boring offense, but Utah averaged under 100 points a game, and Gordon Hayward was still over 20 points a game. And trust me, at the end of games, Utah won them by giving Hayward the ball and having everyone spread out. Hayward would either drive to the basket, draw a foul, or make a shot. That was the offense down the stretch in a Gordon Hayward Utah Jazz-led offense. That's how good he was.
Well, speaking of the Cleveland Browns, we just played some of their stuff from Hard Knocks, and Bud Light has done a promotion that in theory is sound, but in delivery is going to be an absolute disaster. So apparently they have placed in 10 different Cleveland area bars something called a victory fridge filled with Bud Light bottles. So apparently when the clock strikes zero and the Browns first win, their last win, as we know, was week 16 of the 2016 season against the San Diego Chargers. When that happens and they finally win an NFL game, the electromagnet that keeps the refrigerator locked will be turned off through a Wi-Fi connection, opening all of them for fans to enjoy free of charge.
Well, that's something that would never happen in Massachusetts. They can't even have happy hour.
I mean, you know how many people are going to smash into that? By the way, each one of these refrigerators has, like, I don't know, maybe like, it doesn't even look like 50 beers. Like,
all I know is that people line up, they lined up at the Garden for that lame, you could get a hot dog for free thing. And they missed the first period.
Oh, when the Bruins were back from the the lockout. That's right.
And people are gonna charge the bar after a win to get one free beer.
There's gonna be violence. I mean, that thing is going to get smashed into pieces. And these are the aluminum cans too, so you can brain a guy with it.
Just one beer. I mean, there's gonna be so much going on for one beer.
Have you ever happened to be like walking down the street when Ben and Jerry's does like the free cone day? I mean, that line's like 200 people deep. As a matter of fact, there was almost a near riot at several malls when recently there was the Build-A-Bear Workshop did the You Pay Your Age promotion.
Yes.
Where so if you're like a 7-year-old, you pay $7 and you got a Build-A-Bear. I mean, there was like, they had to call in like police to like regulate the lines. They canceled it after 90 minutes. So needless to say, a bunch of angry, or at this point maybe excited, Cleveland Browns fans at a bar. You think they're going to behave themselves?
Free tacos at Taco Bell. Like, what's a taco at Taco Bell? Like, 50 cents?
It's like 79 cents, I think.
For like 79 cents, I'm going to wait in line for 5 hours?
Yep. I guess so.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, Rich and I used to do these appearances at this one club. And you would just go, hey, I have a Banana Republic shirt. And girls would go, okay, let's do lesbian stuff.
It was not a good look. Not a good look. Well, if you want to know just how successful sports gambling is going to be and how much money it's going to take in, let's just say that New Jersey, who in July was the first one to adopt the whole sports betting thing. I know they had some casinos. I don't think you can do it via the app now. Maybe you can. All I know is that the amount of money that was brought in sports bets in July in New Jersey alone, $40.6 million.
And I'm sure it's all going to go where it's supposed to go.
It's government regulated now. By the way,
gets their hands on that money, it's going to go everywhere it's supposed to go.
Dan makes a great point. That's July in like the slowest sports month.
Yeah.
And they still made $40.6 million.
All that money's going to schools. infrastructure.
Yeah,
you know, I think those would be the first two places.
Right, it's gonna you'll notice a difference immediately.
That's right. School improvements, raising teacher salaries.
Yep.
You know, repaving the roads. I mean, they just had a whole project on the Garden State on the Jersey Turnpike to widen the roads. That went really well.
Yeah.
That only took about 3 years.
Yeah, it's like the episode of Seinfeld where Kramer adopts the highway. All right, we'll be right back. We'll find out what Zolik and Bertrand have.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, when it comes to hiring, you don't have time. That means you're having a good time.
Yeah. It's a good time.
As long as you don't sit up too fast.
Exactly. And it takes a while for the rug imprint to come off your cheek. I like that pattern. I like the little cross-knit pattern. You ever had one of those nights, Wallach?
Many.
Wow.
Wallach has done it up before. You'd be surprised.
Many.
About that?
Yep. Back in the New Jack days. Oh, by the way, I meant to tell you, did you hear who's coming to, I think it's like the Wang Theater?
Come on.
It's Belle, Biv DeVoe, and Bobby Brown. It's like almost all of New Edition.
See, I thought Bobby Brown was dead. He's alive.
No, Whitney Houston is dead. Bobby Brown is alive.
Okay.
So why didn't they get the guy with the high voice?
Ralph Tresvant? He might be there. It's not New Edition. It's going by a different name.
It's all right. They'll sing the same stuff. I don't think anyone will miss Ralph Tresvant.
He was the lead singer. How could you say that?
I'm sure there'll be other songs that they do. I mean, I think they don't have to do Mr. Telephone Man. That's
or Cool It Now. So they're two biggest hits.
That's out. Yeah.
So they're not going to do their two biggest hits.
Yeah, it's called the Ronnie, Bobby, Ricky, and Mike tour.
Oh, my God. I'd have Montel Jordan open up.
Dude, you got to go. You know you would love that show.
You're probably right. Yeah, I would.
I think they're just be Wang.
What is it?
Immediately his pants would get tight and he'd just be like, I'm in the mood for boning. Take me to the bone zone.
What John would do?
Yeah, because he would hear that sultry music, and it would remind him of going knocking the boots.